Hello and welcome to the Sweep Podcast with me, Mitchell Willis, and him, Michael Hole.
Well, this is quite a quick turnaround, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not an episode.
Sick of the sight of you
not
already.
An episode for 2 weeks and then two in 2 days.
We're prolific.
Yeah, I think that's probably one word for it. I think obviously it's less than 24 hours since we last visited your podcast inbox, and we're here to bring you, I guess, our take on the bottom half of the Premier League, how they've got on so far, what happens next, and what else are we gonna cover off?
It's definitely gonna be a trip to the Championship, unfortunately. quick flight over to Portugal to see how our Lisbon Lions have got on since Santa popped down their lovely tiled chimneys. So here we are, here we go. We'll start with 11th placed Everton, which, let's face it, I don't think we would have been expecting to say.
No, I mean, one win in five, two losses on the bounce, including a 6-2 humbling at home to Tottenham Hotspur.
Shellacking.
They were nothing short of shambolic. I'd imagine that Everton fans would have probably been looking to at least be in the top half of the table at the turn of the year, whereas actually they're not really any better off than where they were under Sam Allardyce. Whisper that, because they spent a decent amount of money in the summer and Marco Silva is the saviour. But we haven't got an anti-Everton agenda here, despite what some of you may think. So we're going to talk about the positives that have come out of the blue side of Merseyside so far this season.
Do you want to start?
I'd rather not, but given how much you panned him at the start of the season, I'll let you off on this one. Richarlison has been pretty anonymous over this period, but actually, across the season, I think he scored 9 Premier League goals. I don't think either of us thought that would happen, and credit where credit's due. He's played in a different position, which is the excuse that we're using and sticking to, and therefore has obviously been more effective for Everton there than he was out wide for Watford and Everton earlier in the season. There has been some better performances from the likes of Gylfie Sigurdsson as well, and, yep, and Jordan Pickford continues to impress. But it's other areas of the pitch where we've been a little bit concerned about Everton for a while now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the defence, they got rid of Ashley Williams, the worst player in arguably Premier League history last
season.
Wow,
that's a claim.
He was honestly as bad as it gets, though, wasn't he? It was like watching a drunk man.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you that. I do kind
Who
of
had
think...
his eyes cut out.
Yeah.
I don't know, just, yeah, terrible. And they replaced him with who I said, you know, if they signed him at the start of the season, Mina would be my flop of the season. And it took him a while to get in there, and he's been dropped a couple of times recently as well. And to pile on the pressure on Yerry Mina and Michael Keane at the back to make the difference for them was a big risk. And obviously they have got Pickford in goal, who has impressed, but he's still relatively inexperienced as well. And you would say that the Everton backline always used to be very, very experienced. You know, you used to have Baines, Jagielka, even someone like Tony Hibbert in there as well, who, you know, we're solid kind of 7 out of 10 every week, and they don't necessarily have that at the moment. And, you know, Luka Dinya has been good at left back.
Yeah, I think credit where credit's due. I think he's been probably a surprising signing, because not many people expected them to get him from Barcelona, but he's been a bit of a revelation.
And alongside him, you know, Seamus Coleman's naturally taken some time to get back to fitness, but he's still a quality player who offers something to them. But I think the spine of that team, particularly in defence, is probably where the question marks are. And, you know, you've got players like Bernard and Andre Gomes in the centre midfield who pull the strings alongside Sigurdsson, but they're possibly still not quite consistent enough just yet. And then you go to the top end of the pitch, and we talked about Richarlison, who yes, has had a relatively good start to his Everton career, but you've also got, where's Cenk Tosun now? He's not really had the look in as we expected him. We expected him to push on, and again, Ademola Lookman not really being in, and you know, we talk about the negativity. I don't know whether it's right to be negative, whether I'm just being petty. They're 11 points off sixth place now, and I don't necessarily see enough improvement in them to suggest that they deserve to be any higher up than really where they are, the kind of 7th to 11th places.
Yeah, and it's almost the flip of the coin from what we were talking about with Leicester. The style of football that they're playing is much better than it was under Sam Allardyce, but the results are very similar. And do you substitute substance for style? Do you prefer to be higher up the league and actually playing badly? It's obviously something that will probably rumble on and on as a debate. I think in terms of signings, the biggest one that they could make would be Andre Gomes on a permanent deal. He's looked an absolute cut above and has wonderful hair. So for that reason, I think they should get him in alone. Richarlison, as we said before, has been a bright spot. And I think that as an Evertonian, given the fact that you're unlikely to finish in the top six now, the priority has to be an FA Cup run. They've struggled in the Cups in previous seasons and gone out far too early with decent squads. So if I was Marco Silva, I think you've got to try and get the fans back on side. And I know that the owner at Everton's come out recently and said that he's not happy with the league position, and you can't really blame him given the amount that they've spent. But I don't think they'll finish in 11th. I think they'll probably have enough to get up to the sort of 7th or 8th that most people would have been predicting at the start of the season.
And now we move on to Bournemouth, who, as I said yesterday, are the club that have kind of fell away the most over this festive period. And they'll be fine, you know, they'll be happy to sit above that danger zone, pick up the results they need to, and you know, they're really unlikely to push on too much further. That said, it hasn't been plain sailing. You know, they would have expected to get a result home to Brighton. They did. They wouldn't have expected much from trips to Wembley and Old Trafford, which was the case. But they were comfortably beaten in both of those cases as well. And I think that's the worry for Bournemouth, that they are becoming a lot more leaky. And I think they've obviously taken a step to address that and bringing Nathaniel Clyne in. I think more work probably needs to be done to strengthen that defence, though.
Yeah, I had a look back at their last sort of 12 games, I think it was. Sorry, 13 games. They've lost 10 of those last 13. And obviously, Eddie Howe's been hit with injuries to people like Lewis Cook, Simon Francis and Adam Smith have been in and out of the team. I want to get your opinion on the signing of Dominic Solanke. This, for me, is up there with the Richarlison deal. Completely out of left field. I think he scored one Premier League goal, and they've paid £19 million, potentially rising to £24 million.
I think it's synonymous with English talent, isn't it? That you just go for massively inflated prices. And I think, you know, on that basis, you pay for goals when you get a striker, really. You know, there's some that are predominantly known as kind of hold-up men, but Solanke isn't. He's someone who you will be expecting goals from on a regular basis. And I think the one thing he will get at Bournemouth, or should get, is a little bit more playing time, so he has the opportunity to prove himself. He naturally has some qualities, and we've seen that, and you know, we've seen that in his earlier career before he went to Liverpool. But it's a hell of a lot of money to pay for someone who's A, played that little, and B, not done what he's supposed to have done as well.
Yeah, and he's coming in injured. He's not likely to be fit until February, and I'm not convinced that he does suit the way that Bournemouth play either. They play with so much pace up front with the likes of Josh King and Callum Wilson, Ryan Fraser, and to put somebody who's not really known for that side of his game, Solanke's a physical presence, but he's also good on the floor as well, or so we hear, because obviously we've not really seen a huge amount of him in the Premier League, and it just screams of poor planning from Bournemouth's part, and you don't really associate with them that with them. They're normally the kind of club who will look for a long time at bringing in the right player. They did it earlier in the season with Jefferson Lerma, and
signing Jermaine Defoe on a really long contract?
Yeah, what was it, 5 years, 130 grand a week, and obviously he's departed to Rangers, which I think is probably the right thing to do, but Bournemouth will retain a huge amount of his wages. They will continue to pay him for the next 18 months, and I think Bournemouth will be happy with where they are, but it could have been so much more, and to drop from 6th position last month to 12th now is a sign of how competitive the Premier League can be at times. The most important thing for them is that they stabilise and they get that new stadium built. It's possibly on the horizon, but it's supposedly been in the offing before, and then plans have gone by the wayside, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, but that's it. I mean, they're anticipating 2020, and if they weren't in the Premier League by any chance, then that would be a huge disaster for them to go into that new stadium. It's the same with Spurs not being in the Champions League and getting in their new stadium. It's a completely different kettle of fish, but it's the same principles. And I guess the other big question is, you know, what does Eddie Howe do? Does he stick with this team and stay there, or would his reputation be tarnished if Bournemouth were to potentially get dragged into it and maybe even go down?
I think the only thing for Eddie Howe from Bournemouth is a step up to one of the bigger sides outside the top six, and maybe an Everton, maybe...
Who's an Everton fan? That's a natural fit as
Yeah,
well.
maybe somewhere like Leicester, or... I mean, Newcastle are a bigger club than Bournemouth. It's a bigger job. But I think that's the problem. I don't see him getting one of those jobs short-term, and it's going to then take one of the top four, top six to get rid of one of their managers and really take a punt on him, because he's got no experience of Europe. He doesn't have any experience of managing at a top team, but I think he deserves it. And it would be a crying shame to see somebody with so much potential not fulfil that by staying at a club that he's pretty comfortable with and probably aren't in any danger of going down this season or going forward, really.
And we talk about Eddie Howe, probably in very similar way. We talk about Chris Hughton with Brighton, and another solid season for them. You know, they're 13th at the moment, hovering above the danger zone, but Hughton does once again deserve the plaudits. You know, he's got his team well organised, they work hard, take the few chances they get, including from set pieces as well. I think nearly half of their goals this season come from set pieces. And, it, you know, again, like how it would be very intriguing to see what happens to Hughton were Brighton to really drop off. And I think for them, you know, we've said before, the home matches are key. They beat Everton and drew with Arsenal over the festive period, as well as a good away point at West Ham. So, you know, they're getting the results and they seem to get them at the right time as well, which is huge for them.
Yeah, I think that Chris Hughton, for me, is probably the manager of the season in the bottom half. You look at how much stability he's brought to that club, and they've had a really promising first half of the season, despite the fact that they've dropped off a little bit. I think you look at the signings that they made in the summer, there was a lot of unknowns, and he's bedded those signings in at his pace rather than trying wholesale changes from the start. Glenn Murray's got 8 goals so far. It's a really good return for somebody who's basically written off every season, by me included. Lacadia and Doné have chipped in recently, and I think that between Lewis Duncan and Shane Duffy, they've scored 7 Premier League goals between them, and it just shows how important set pieces are to Brighton. They've got big physical players and they play to their strengths rather than trying to adapt to almost match up with teams that they're playing against. And tactically, there's probably a lot to be said for the way that Hughton signs players. He signs players who he know will fit the mould rather than people who come with a reputation, if you like, which has been the undoing of some sides in the bottom half.
And what are they doing going forward? Do they just continue doing what they're doing, you know, or can they push on going forward as they become more established? Because I'd say then, I don't think they're relegation fodder anymore, and that's a quick turnaround, really, for a club of that size. And, you know, they're established in the mid-table, and you look at other clubs in recent years who've got themselves in that position, then fell away and effectively got left behind. You know, would you say it's resting on their laurels if they didn't push on, or are they just being very sensible?
Absolutely not. I think that Brighton as a football club will always be outside the top six. I don't think there's any danger of them ever breaking into that. And for them, it's just got to be trying to finish as high up the league as they can every season. If they're able to improve on what they did maybe in the Cups this season, then that will be a bonus. If they're able to solidify mid-table, then I think that you have to give Hughton all of the credit that he deserves. And it's such a great model for a team that came into the Premier League with no previous experience, and they didn't get rid of all their players. They've still got a lot of the players who are playing for them, not only in the Championship, but some players from the League One days. And it just shows what can be done with stability. And I think that as a Brighton fan, you'd be over the moon to finish where they are at the moment. I think 13th is a great season, and after that maybe challenge yourselves for the top 10, but I think that they have to be realistic at the same time.
And Brighton's fierce, not so local rivals, Crystal Palace, much improved over the last month or so. I think they've started to play to their strengths, which is fairly solid defence and just a hell of a lot of pace to burn as well. You know, a couple of standout results over the festive period, a 2-0 away win at Wolves, and of course that shock away win at Manchester City just before Christmas, 3-2 in a game that included one of the goals of the season.
Goal of the season. I don't see
in
how
the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, I know that you're going to go on about McGinnie Ester's strike,
which was better and off the bar,
but the difference for me is that counted for nothing, and I think that's why. And it did, in the grand scheme of things. I think he lost that game at home to Sheffield Wednesday.
Maybe
drew it. But yeah. I think the significance of that win for Crystal Palace away at the Champions,
yep,
is what will give that goal more votes if it ever came down to the two of them. Despite that, I agree with you. I think that McGinn's probably was a better strike and a more difficult hit, but it's never going to get the media attention, yeah, that one of Andros Townsend's does. And I think you need to look at a couple of players that you've highlighted in your notes here. They've got somebody in Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who nobody knew about at the start of the season, but he's developed into one of the most consistent fullbacks in the Premier League. He's a young English player, which can only be good for the senior side, and he's been given a run despite a couple of mistakes early on, and Roy Hodgson's shown real faith in a player that, like I say, was unknown to the majority at the start of the year.
And like him, they've got someone like Patrick Van Aanholt on the other side who has a lot of shots. I think he has more shots than nearly anyone else in that team. And then, you know, Townsend has been relatively good over the last few months, and then obviously Zaha. And I think, you know, you look at those players, even someone like Jeffrey Schlupp, who will just run and run and run all day, and they'll create chances, but they just desperately need a goal scorer, and it's constantly the only thing we can really say about this side.
Yeah, Palace have scored 19 goals, six of which have been penalties, and when you consider they've played 21 games, to have only scored 13 goals outside of penalties is not a great return. Obviously, there's only two sides in the Premier League who've scored less, in Huddersfield and Newcastle, so that will be a worry for Roy Hodgson. But the good thing is, with his experience, he doesn't panic. You saw the poor start that they had, and they've really picked up in recent weeks, and it's not a coincidence that that's happened, because a lot of the injuries that they had previously, those players have come back. And I think that Hodgson's able to get a tune out of this Palace side, because when they're on form, they are probably capable of beating anyone in the top six. We've seen that against the likes of Manchester City. And from a Crystal Palace point of view now, they need to try and finish top 10. I think that they've got the squad capable of doing it, and I think they need to buy a striker, but it may be that they wait until the summer to do so, because we know how difficult the January transfer window can be.
And of course, we'll hopefully be getting the Benteke ticker out of the cupboard, which could be massive. You never know, he might be able to find some form.
As much as we give him stick, he does give Palace a different dimension. His hold-up play, his link play is good, and I think that he just needs to bring the goals back to his game. I think if he was the kind of striker who got 10 goals a season, then that would be a pretty solid return for somebody who does a lot of work off the ball.
And they're a 1-0 win team as well, aren't they, Crystal Palace? So 10 goals a season could be the 10 1-0 wins that elevates them way, way beyond. But I think we have to now move on to Newcastle, and I'm going to try and plug some gaps before we inevitably reach the normal conclusion with them. And I still think they've got a poor squad. I said that earlier in the season. They have some standout players that could no doubt get in elsewhere and thrive. You look at someone like Rondon and Lascelles as well, and very, very occasionally Jonjo Shelvey, but that is very occasional. Over and above that, I'm not sure they've got enough quality throughout the rest of the squad, and they're not going to get it without investment. And, you know, this is where you look at Rafa Benitez. The job that he's doing is working with very little, and really is just about keeping their heads above water. And I wonder if they had a different manager in charge, whether it would be a different story.
I think you're right. And the thing with Newcastle is this consistency piece. They will go on a run of games where they'll pick up points, but then when they're on a run of losses, it's where's the next point coming from? Where's the next goal coming from? And we saw it happen last season. They were in the bottom three for a long time, and then suddenly they managed to put a decent run together. Other teams struggled, and I think they finished 10th in the end, or certainly up there.
They're just as likely to lose 10 games on the bounce as win 3 games on the bounce, and that is a huge difference. You know, that's 9 points as opposed to none from 30. So it is the case. You know, they have to win their home games like last season. And, you know, you look back at the last few games, they lost to Manchester United. They failed to not only beat Fulham, fail to even score against them, and I think that's the biggest worry.
Yeah, I've had a look at what they might need in the transfer window.
Oh,
excuse me, and I think they probably need fullbacks and an effective number 10. Rondon's great in spells, but if a team sets up correctly, then he's pretty easy to defend against, and the fullbacks at Newcastle are often left exposed. The problem is that Benitez is always trying players out of position to fit his system, and as tactically, he is a great manager. He is stubborn as well, and probably needs to become a little bit more flexible, knowing that those funds aren't going to come. I think the worry with the goals is not scoring enough. It is going to be a downside for any potential investor, because do you put all your money into a club that could be playing Championship football next season? I don't think that they're far enough away from the relegation zone for anyone to really put the money on the table at this stage.
No, I think you're right, and it's frustrating because, you know, Newcastle really are as big as Manchester City were when they got their billionaire boost. And, you know, they've got a huge stadium, a thriving city where they know 50-odd thousand fans will turn up week in, week out. They've got, at the minute, a Champions League manager at the helm, you could argue. And if they don't get a buyer, for me, I think they'll go down in the next two seasons.
I think you're probably right. And that's a worry for a club that's bounced around between the two divisions so often over the past sort of three or four years.
And that's all for part one. Join us after this short break, where we'll take a much needed trip to the championship.
Should have gone to Specsavers, Charlie, because I tell you what, he's not offside. Well, he's absolutely bang in line, not offside.
Well, maybe you should go also then, Jeff, because you couldn't see driving home the other night because you don't even wear your glasses in TV in case you get slagged off. So you just stick to Specsavers and I'll do the game.
Welcome back to the Sweep Podcast, and we are taking that trip to the championship. And much like the Premier League, not a huge amount of change in terms of the team's positions. However, the top two, Leeds and Norwich, have faltered somewhat in recent games. Leeds losing the last two against Forest and Hull. Norwich only picking up one win in the last five as well. Both sides are out of the cup, which they'll no doubt see as a blessing. But with tough fixtures for both in upcoming weeks, culminating in a head-to-head at the beginning of February, we could see some further slip-ups. And who knows, one of the chasing pack catching them. Favourites to do so at the moment would be Sheffield United, who are back on track with three straight wins. They're 2 points off Norwich, face them in the next few weeks as well, and they could leapfrog them. Behind them, it's been a mixed few weeks for West Brom, Middlesbrough and Derby, none of which have found any real consistency. However, with 4 points between the playoff places and seventh place Nottingham Forest, they do have a slight cushion, and as ever, with the fixtures piling up, games amongst themselves, they are definitely open to be caught. And it says a lot that three of the clubs outside the playoffs have lost less games than those filling the playoff positions. You've got Forest, Birmingham have only lost five all season but drawn too many, as have Aston Villa, who have lost six but drawn 11. It's not good enough given the quality of our squad. And that said, the football is a lot better, and when we're on it, we could genuinely beat anyone. However, when we're not, we look absolutely dreadful.
Talking of Aston Villa, yeah. We obviously did the podcast pre-Christmas in which you told everyone that you're going to take your girlfriend to her first Villa game. First question, are you still together?
Just about,
right.
Yeah.
Good news. And second question, how did she enjoy it?
Yeah, the game, just to remind everyone, was a 3-2 loss for Villa after taking a 2-0 lead at halftime. All the goals were at our end, so there was a little bit of excitement for her. But I think the highlight for me was we were walking to the ground, and I kind of tongue-in-cheek said, do you need like a little earpiece with the commentary on? You know, like you get the cricket.
Yeah, yeah.
And she looked at me all puzzled, and I kind of said, you know, just so you know what's going on.
Yeah.
And she kind of looked at me again all puzzled, and I said, did you think they had the commentary on at the ground?
And
she looked at me and kind of said, yeah, I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest, but maybe.
Over the tannoy?
Yeah. So just when you sat in your seat, you can hear what's going on, as well as obviously watch on the pitch, which I thought was quite entertaining. And to be fair to her, it's not really something she'd thought about. It wasn't though she said, where's the commentary when it started?
Yeah,
when I'd referenced it. Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was quite a highlight, and that's probably the last time she's ever going to go to a game.
That was going to be my third question. Is that it?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, I think she probably got annoyed with me, like, kind of hitting her leg every time something was happening. You know, just that tetchy excitement that you get when something's happening, or the frustration of losing to a last-minute goal after your fullback just heads the ball into Kemar Roof's path.
Not that you're still dwelling on it.
No, not at all.
2.5 weeks late.
Not at all. And I think, you know, we've got, there's still a hell of a lot of points to play for until May. And, you know, just a couple of wins sees you in and around the playoffs again. So still optimistic. We've managed to keep hold of Tammy Abraham as well, which is massive for us.
You have so far.
And yes, so far.
I want to ask you a question because we made our predictions at the start of the season. My three were Aston Villa, Leeds and Derby County. Leeds are top, Derby are sixth, Villa down in tenth. But
don't
not
say
a million,
down in tenth.
Just let me finish. Not a million miles off the playoffs. I think you're only, what, 5 points off?
Yeah.
Which is easily clawable back, if that's a phrase. What do you think will be the final six? Because one of your predictions will not go there because it was that bad. But yeah, go on. What do you think will be the top six in the championship?
I think Leeds and Norwich will be up there. I don't think they'll both go up automatically. I think of the teams in the playoffs, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Derby and Sheffield United, I think Sheffield United are possibly the ones that I'd see dropping out of it. That said, they've had their slump already though, and they've managed to get themselves back up there. I think West Brom have certainly got a very good squad. Middlesbrough have got the Pulis factor, which I think makes a huge difference as well. And then Derby County are an odd one again. They have spectacular results and then they massively drop off as well. So, and that's probably because they've got an inexperienced manager and they've got a very young, inexperienced team as well. That said, they're kind of growing together at the same time. So they're definitely going to be there or thereabouts. I do still think Villa have got a decent chance of getting in there as well. I think if you look at the teams that are above them in Forest, Birmingham and QPR, you would say, and taking my Villa hat off, you would say that Villa are the stronger ones out of there as well. But it will be close. So I think if I had to nail it on now, it'd be Leeds, Norwich, Sheffield United, possibly not. Villa instead of them, West Brom, Middlesbrough and Derby.
So you only think the top six will change one team between now and then?
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about Hull City because Nigel Adkins is a hero of mine from his days at Southampton, and he's got some undeserved flack in recent years when things haven't gone right at other clubs like Reading and Sheffield United. But he seems to have found a team in Hull, especially in recent weeks, who he's been able to mould into the side that we probably saw similar football at Southampton. And they haven't got many big name players, but he's not that sort of manager, is he?
No,
and they've had some great results of late.
Five wins out of five, you know, that they're the only club in the Championship to do that. So massive credit to them. I really like Nigel Adkins as well. He was at the helm when we were, you know, when I started going to the Southampton games as well. And I think, you know, Hull have that Premier League experience. They've been a bit of a yo-yo club, and I think probably more so than a lot of that top half of the table as well. They've got that experience, so it'd be great to see them do something better than they have been doing the last few years. And given everything that's happened off the pitch as well, you would hope there's positive times coming for them. I think there are still doubts about what's going on off the pitch there, but I think while they're still playing football, while they're giving themselves a chance, then there's something to be roaring about for the Tigers and potentially mauling the opposition this season.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite chants, getting mauled by the Tigers. I've seen it quite a few times. I know it was banded about on social media and people were taking the mic, but it's original.
It's the hand gesture though, isn't it? It's embarrassing to see a 45-year-old fat man doing a tiger claw.
I've seen worse hand gestures from 45-year-old men doing things with their hands at football, so I think it's all right.
The less said, the better.
Let's go to the bottom of the Championship.
Yes, Bristol City and Millwall have both, they've seen an upturn in fortunes like Hull, the latter winning the last three, lift them out the bottom three. They're just below that mid-table playoff chasing pack, along with Stoke City, who just parted company with Gary Rowett after a disappointing first half of the season. And they've been heavily linked, and I think they've come out today saying they're looking at interviewing Nathan Jones from Luton Town, which is slightly left field, you would say, but I think he's got a decent reputation in the game. I think he's got his Luton team playing good football, but is that what they need at this moment?
It's a gamble, isn't it? And I know that one of our friends who's a Stoke fan wanted David Moyes in, didn't he? Which,
yep.
I suppose you go one or two ways. You go with the experienced person who's got the potential to make sure that you get up the table relatively quickly, or you go for somebody who's progressive and who's probably got some new ideas. And obviously it's yet to be seen whether he will be confirmed as a Stoke manager or not, but if he is, then you'd imagine that he's got a pretty big task on his hand, because it's not so long ago that Luton were in the Conference, and to go to a team that spent so long in the Premier League is a massive step up.
And speaking of big tasks, you've got the bottom three. It's starting to have a familiar feeling to it, with Ipswich and Reading getting left behind, and then it's Bolton, Wigan and Rotherham, who, you know, a good old-fashioned northern ding-dong to fight off for the final relegation spot. And as I say, hell of a long way to go, plenty of football to be played, plenty of points to pick up. And the big questions are, can Bielsa keep his team running? Can the Canaries soar into the Premier League? And will Aston Villa fulfil that frustratingly brilliant potential? Or will they finish below their rivals from across the city? I bloody hope not, but we shall see, and we will report back each week.
It's time to go to sunnier climes. We're going to go to Portugal, where Sporting have had a pretty mixed few weeks. And when I say mixed, I mean pretty terrible.
Oh,
one win and two losses leaves them fourth, 8 points off top and a point behind their arch rivals Benfica. They had a 2-1 win over Belenenses.
Good.
Last week. However, this was sandwiched between a 1-0 loss away at Vitória Guimarães and Monday's 2-1 loss to Tondela. They will be looking to bounce back this weekend when they take on league leaders Porto in the biggest game of the season so far. They will also be hoping that their influential midfielder Bruno Fernandes, who has been linked with a big money move away from the club, will stay there. I mean, 35 million.
35 million linked heavily with Everton as well, and just what they need, another midfielder for 35 million as well.
That's it. I've got a fact for you, Mitch. Yep, you ready for it? So, fun Sporting Lisbon fact of the day. They've played at 5 home grounds, moving into their most recent stadium, the new version of the Estadio José Alvarez in 2003.
Very good. That is all for the Championship in Portugal. Join us for the bottom 5 teams in the Premier League after this short, short break.
Simon goes down in a manner that seems impossible. If I took your jumper now, let's try it. Oh, no, you didn't fall over. That's incredible. Confusing for all, certainly for myself. I thought it was bizarre.
Welcome back to the final part of the Premier League roundup, where we're going to talk about the bottom 5 sides, starting in Lancashire with Burnley. And they've had a relatively indifferent Christmas, to say the least, haven't they?
Yeah, but the wins that they've had were huge. The last 2 games, a home win against West Ham, and more crucially, an away win at Huddersfield was massive. You've got Chris Wood back amongst the goals, and that's the key for them, really. They've got players who can score goals in him, Barnes and Vokes, and we know that despite the style of playing, conceding possession and shots, the defence is good enough because they showed that last season, and it's no great surprise that they look better with Tom Heaton in goal as well. You know, no offence to Joe Hart, but
But he's crap.
He had a whole corner with us last season because he was so bad. But he's conceded a lot of goals, and despite not being all his own fault, he's hardly showed himself to be the top keeper that he was, say, maybe 5 years ago.
I think it's difficult, though, because Burnley fans now will be thinking, right, well, now Tom Heaton's back in net, we can just go on and win all the games that we lost because Joe Hart was in there, and it doesn't necessarily mean that. They've still got a long way to go, and the performance levels, like you say, in the last couple of games have been decent, but when you look at that in comparison with the games throughout December and November, there are a lot of losses in there, and I think that Sean Dyche deserves credit because he stuck with his guns, and we talked a lot about whether tactically he might change things. He's gone down the personnel line, which is obviously one of 2 choices as a manager when you're in a bit of a funk. And I think that the luck element has probably helped Burnley a little bit recently as well. The fact that everyone in English football knows they haven't had a penalty since 2005 is obviously there for all to see. But they've had a bit of luck recently. I'm in a bit of a catch-22 with Burnley because I like them as a club. I think they're good for the Premier League, but by them staying up, it's likely that Southampton are going to go down. So I don't really know where I stand on this one.
Do you think they've got a good enough squad to finish the season more comfortably than they've started it? Because obviously they showed last season they probably overachieved, but would they massively underachieve if they were relegated, or is this kind of 16th position where they should be?
I think obviously it was a massive overachievement last season. I think that it's been an underachievement this season, but I wouldn't say that they're far off where they deserve to be at the moment. I think that 16th is probably about right for Burnley, and actually if they were to get relegated, they probably couldn't argue. If you asked them at the start of this season where they thought they'd finish, I'm sure they would have had expectations of probably 12th or above, given that they were, 7th last season?
Yep.
But ultimately they haven't been good enough, and they need to wise up to that and not try and consider how great they were and put more emphasis on the work that they need to do between now and May.
Let's move on to Cardiff City, just outside the relegation zone, and I would say Neil Warnock is having a lovely old time, and who can blame him?
I can blame him because he's doing that at the expense of the teams around him, and you have to give him immense credit. I think that he took a lot of flack, didn't he, in the summer. He was somebody who became a bit of a laughing stock, and we kind of thought it'd be an amusing season.
Oh, he's still a laughing
stock.
Oh,
yeah,
but funny.
But actually, I think he's probably gained a lot more respect from your average football fan than anyone really expected. He's masterminded wins over sides that you wouldn't necessarily expect them to beat. They've scored goals, and he's done it with a side that wasn't massively changed from last season. Nobody expected them to come up to the Premier League, and nobody really has expected them to be where they are at the moment.
We would have had them down by Christmas. Pretty much everyone would be near enough down by Christmas, and you know, they're very much scrapping away.
So my strategy for Fantasy Premier League so far this season, and I'm now going to change it, has been basically any striker that's playing against Cardiff, bring him in as your free transfer and captain him. And it hasn't worked because they are defensively resolute. They're well organised. They do the simple things right, and they're not going to pull up any trees. They know that, 17th, 16th is probably as high as they're likely to go this season. But actually, the confidence that they will have getting to the halfway point and being outside the relegation zone is massive for Neil Warnock. And you saw how they were able to really batten down the hatches in the second half of the season last year. They got into the top two and they stayed there through pure grit and determination. And Warnock will have that same siege mentality about his players between now and May. And that could be the one thing that they've got over the other sides that are down there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the festive period, you know, a draw away at Palace was huge. And away you win at Leicester as well. And the next two fixtures are massive. Huddersfield at home, Newcastle away. And, you know, it's conceivable they could win both of those games, and if they do, they're looking more at safety than you know,
over their shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. So equally though, they could be pulled right into it. So it's exciting times for them, and you know, whilst they still have that chance to battle, as you say, they will very much keep themselves in there.
And the biggest worry for Cardiff is the fact that they do concede goals for fun. 41 goals in 21 games is worrying. It doesn't take a genius to work out that by conceding on average nearly two goals a game, it leaves you needing to score three to win. Now, they've only managed to do that once this season, and that was against Fulham. I still think they will go down, and the reason for that is that I think that the first half of the season for them, they've exceeded all expectations, and I think now the expectation for Cardiff from the outside world will be, well, actually, you're good enough to be 17th at the halfway point. You should stay up from here. It's in your hands. You've just got to make sure that you win as many games as the teams around you, and you'll be all right. And I think I compare it to somebody like Blackpool, who nobody really thought would go down after they had such a great start to their Premier League season, and lo and behold, it was the last day of the season. I think they had to beat Manchester United, and they ended up slipping into the Championship, and we've all seen what's happened to them since then. So I think Warnock's got a massive job in his hands. I think that the issue as well is at the top of the pitch. So far, their three strikers have amassed six goals between them, and I just don't think that if you duplicate that across 38 games, that's going to be enough, and that's why I think they probably need to be active in this transfer window.
Whatever happens, they've been entertaining in their own way, and if they survive it, it'll be huge, and if not, they won't have gone without a fight. And speaking of fight, we'll move to Southampton. And I say, speaking of fight, I'm going to refrain from you starting a fight with me.
Yeah, I mean, we're back in the bottom three after the initial resurgence under the Hutch. Does it tell a full story? Probably not. The performances have improved. The loss to West Ham I can understand because the players looked absolutely knackered. And the Manchester City game, he rested players, actually, with a view to trying to go to Chelsea and get something. And we got something there, defended really well. And I think that the main thing from a Southampton point of view is we have to start trying to beat the teams around us because we've been so poor in those fixtures so far.
Yeah, and there was a pre-Christmas win away at Huddersfield.
I was there. I was swinging my hat, and I had a great time. Yeah, we were all given Santa hats at that game. I think a lot of people saw it on Match of the Day. A few people got in touch with me and said that that chant was one of the worst they've ever heard. But there was worse at the Chelsea game. Some of the fans embarrass themselves. I'll tweet the video out on Twitter. I don't really want to discuss it publicly, but I'd just like to say I wasn't there and I wasn't part of that one. I think we need to do a lot in this transfer window, and I've made a few notes about this. There's a bit of talk actually that our number one, Alex McCarthy, may leave in this window, and if that happens, I think I'd be a little bit worried going through the rest of the season with an inexperienced Angus Gunn and a haphazard Fraser Forster. Defensively, we are woeful. We concede goals for fun, and I think the problem at the moment is we genuinely don't know who our best centre-half partnership is. We know that Wesley Hoot is probably our worst defender, and if we can get rid of him, and it looks like Manolo Gabbiadini is going to leave as well, then that will free up quite a lot of wages and also a decent whack of money for Hasan Hüttl to strengthen. So along with the centre-half, we definitely need some pace up front. As good as Shane Long is at running around, he's scored two goals in 60 games, which, all being said and done, is a dreadful return from anyone who labels themselves as a striker. We've been linked with Ademola Lookman this week, which would probably tick a lot of boxes. He played under Hasan Hüttl at Leipzig and was prolific over there. And
on loan or permanent?
I'm not sure whether we'd be able to afford him. I think that Everton would probably want about £30 million for him, and wages may prove a little bit of a stumbling block. So it may be a loan deal, but I think that there are rules and regulations around loan deals, and we've already got Danny Ings on a long-term loan between now and the end of the season. The The issue with Danny Ings, as much as he's scored goals, I think he's got 7 or 8 for the season, is the fact that he seems to miss 1 in 3 games through injury, and that's a worry. We've got a deal in place to sign him for $20 million at the end of the year, and if we're not in the Premier League at that stage, to be outlaying that amount of money on somebody who's injury prone is a real concern. So I think that we need to probably spend big in January. I think we've got to speculate to accumulate and back the manager in the hope that he can keep us in the division. If not, we might have to go down to looking at the under-18s and the under-23s, which he's done recently with some success. But I think it puts a lot of pressure on players who've not played in that league before, but haven't really got the experience of a relegation fight.
One word answer: will Southampton stay up?
Yes.
Will Fulham stay up?
No.
No.
I mean, again, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? I think that it's obviously not gone to plan, and they've done okay over Christmas. The win against Huddersfield was massive. They've obviously drawn against Newcastle and Wolves as well. So there are signs of improvement, but equally, there aren't any signs of a fully settled side. The defence still look woefully out of shape, and I just think as a team, Fulham don't look overly fit. I don't know whether that's to do with Jukanovic or whether it's obviously when Ranieri's come in, he's not really had a lot of time to work on fitness. It might just be the Christmas period, but I think they've got a lot to do between now and the end of this transfer window if they do want to stay in the Premier League. And when you asked me just then whether they will stay in the Premier League, my answer was based on the team and the squad that they've got at the moment. If they do bring in new faces, you never know. But the form's picked up a little bit, but I think the personnel has to do too.
But it's mental that we're saying that, and they signed so many players in the summer as well. In theory, they have got a good enough squad on paper to be doing much better than they are. And, you know, I guess we have to look at those players and pick out a few individuals. There's a huge reliance on Mitrovic, who smashed it in the Championship, but struggling to find form week in, week out in top flight. That said, he's probably got his back to goal for much of the game, and I think that, you know, he's probably still the main match winner for Fulham, but he's probably not getting as many chances. And I think part and parcel of that is Ryan Sessegnon has dropped off a cliff, really. He hasn't really stepped up as expected, and I think there'll be a lot of disappointment there. The same as Schürrle, he's patchy at best, I'd say. And I think with, you know, those three, in theory, they should be, you know, they should all be scoring and creating goals every single game.
And I agree with you on all of those points, but very similar to what we were talking about with Cardiff is the other end of the pitch, really, for Fulham. It's been a season to forget defensively, and they've conceded 47 in 21, which is the most conceded in a Premier League season at this stage so far. I mean, Derby conceded 87 goals in 2007-2008. Fulham are currently at pace to beat that by 7, and we all know what happened to Derby that year. So Ranieri is a defensively minded manager. He seems to have finally stuck with a goalkeeper, which is pleasing given the fact that they rotated 3 early doors, and they just need some Premier League experience. I think Gary Cahill would be a massive signing for them. I know that we talked about Victor Moses as well possibly going there earlier. They've also been linked with Danny Drinkwater. So I think that Fulham are a side who aren't going to be scared to spend money. They spent $100 million in the summer to try and ensure that they stayed in the Premier League. What is it if they spend another $40 now? The difference between being in the Premier League and being in the Championship is so vast in terms of the money that's brought into the club. And I mean, Shahid Khan's got a lot of money as well. It's not like he's having to sell players to bring players in. So I think there will be movement at Fulham, and if they are able to strengthen, they've got a tactically astute manager there who could keep them up. But like I say, with the squad that they've got at the moment, it just seems like a bridge too far.
One word answer: will Huddersfield stay up?
Unlikely. I don't know where to start with Huddersfield, because they're a club that so many Premier League neutrals are fans of, and what they've done at that side over the past couple of years has been a real hope for any side in the Championship that actually it's not all about money. It can be about quality and team spirit, but 8 games, 8 straight defeats, and it's difficult to see where that run ends, to be honest. I think obviously they've got Cardiff away this weekend, and they've got Manchester City, they go to Chelsea as well, and they've got Everton. So I just struggle to really see where the next point's coming from, let alone the next win.
I agree. I mean, if they can get anything from Cardiff this weekend, even a point, that would be massive. And I think that Everton at home is given the form they've been in, is a massive opportunity for them as well. And, you know, I think Huddersfield generally have the ability to beat anybody at home, or certainly give anyone a game, and that is crucial. But equally, just picking up a couple of home wins now isn't going to be enough. You know, 8 points off safety, anything but wins on a regular basis, we'll just see them remain the same.
Yeah, I mean, they don't score goals, do they? That's a real problem. I think Steve Meunier scored his first goal of the season recently, and Laurent Depoitre has been on the fringes. They're missing Aaron Moy, who's out injured, but you'd expect he's probably going to be out for a little bit longer if he does indeed join it with that Australia squad for the Asian Cup. So I just worry for Huddersfield. I think that the quality's lacking. They don't look like they're going to spend big in January, which they did last season, and that was pretty much what kept them up. The addition of Condolo is a really good signing, and you thought that actually they'd built themselves a solid base for this season. But the problem that they have is the goal scoring, and unfortunately that's the only way that they're going to get out of this position. Drawing games at this stage of the season is not going to be enough for them. But I had a chat with some Huddersfield supporting friends when I went to the game just before Christmas, and they said, you know what, this is the best we've ever been in terms of league position. We've really enjoyed the Premier League ride, and if we do go down, Championship's not a bad league to be in. I remember sort of 7 or 8 years ago when both Southampton and Huddersfield were in League One together, and those were the days where, as much as they were doing okay, they wouldn't have ever seen themselves getting into the Premier League.
And that's it, you know, they had a trip to Wembley and won the playoff game. There's big games at the John Smiths and cracking away days that they, you know, the fans probably couldn't have ever dreamt of that. So I have absolutely no doubt they'll take this experience and they'll run with it. And I think, you know, as a club that ordinarily would be out of the headlines, struggling to attract top talent, keeping themselves with, you know, very few money troubles and the risks of elite level football and subsequent misrun of the clubs that we've seen, they'll take just coming up there, having a couple of years and then the parachute payments and, you know, almost being set for life after that. And that's huge for them. I think the bigger question is the more short term. You know, I would say there's very little chance of them getting out of it, and I want to get your thoughts on David Wagner, who really most of the clubs, let's face it, would have got shot a few games ago. You know, 8 games, 8 defeats, pretty much anywhere else in the league you'd be looking for someone else.
Yeah, but I think that as a member of the board there, or if you're in a position to make a decision on somebody who's going to come in and possibly replace him, is there anyone out there who can do a better job with the players that he's got at his disposal? And I think the answer to that is no. David Wagner is such a great motivator. He's got them playing decent football. And as difficult as it may seem, I think that by sacking him, they would probably struggle to pick up any real decent performances between now and the end of the season. I just don't think that they would get a new manager bounce by getting rid of somebody like Wagner. I think that he's the fabric of that football club, and if he stays with them, if they go down, you never know, they'd have a shot of at least getting in the playoffs next season.
I wholeheartedly agree, and that is your lot. That is all of the Premier League teams reviewed, and as we say, there's still a long time left to play yet, and a lot could happen, and I think it's going to be a really exciting few months.
Absolutely right. Join us after this break for the latest quiz and the socials. She just so fly. I like big boys, and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. Yeah, when a girl walks in with an itty bitty boys, spin around thing in your face, you get spread. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Sweeper podcast, and it's nearly time for my first turn in the hot seat in 2019. But before then, Mitch is going to give you a little roundup of how you can get in contact with us.
You can get us on Twitter at The Sweeper Pod, Instagram and Facebook, search The Sweeper Podcast, and email us at thesweeperpodcast@gmail.com. And while we're at it, get all over us on iTunes. Subscribe, rate and review. You can get us everywhere else as well. Audio Boom, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts.
Deezer,
good. YouTube.
We're on
the YouTube, and As we said yesterday, just get rating and reviewing and spread the word. We want to grow this podcast massively this year, and we can't do that without you.
You sounded like a technophobe then. We're on the YouTube.
The YouTube, yeah. We're on the World Wide Webinet.
We are indeed. Right, let's get to the quiz.
Yes, I managed to claw back 1 point yesterday, so it's a 18-11 overall. So
you did indeed, yeah. A 7-point lead. Yeah. You're Huddersfield, making the run to try and get close to that relegation zone. And I'm Southampton, trying to get out of the relegation zone. And
we are pretty piss poor at this quiz, aren't we?
Yeah,
this season,
yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, both rubbish.
Yeah, okay, right. So we'll start you off with S for Super Sub.
Yeah.
Topically, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the player to score the most Premier League goals as a substitute in a single match when he scored 4 in 12 minutes. But who was this against?
Nottingham Forest.
Correct. Thought it started with an easy one.
Thank you very much.
Time to score?
I think it was... I mean, this isn't for any points, is it? I've got no idea what the score was.
8-1.
Oh, my God, was it?
8-1, yeah. G is for goal scorer. Tis the season for the FA Cup. And for one man, he loved it. He scored in 4 different finals. Who is he?
Oh, great question.
What's any great if you get it wrong?
Recent? I mean, like, are we talking pre-Premier League era?
Post-Premier League era.
Scored in 4 FA Cup finals. Blimey. I'm going to go for Didier Drogba.
Correct. Good answer. Bastard. B is for Brazil, who are the only nation to have played Brazil and not lost to them. The only nation in the world.
Wow.
It's quite a tough one, but I thought it was an interesting
one. Yeah, it is a tough one. I'm guessing it must be in tournament football or possibly a friendly.
As far as I'm aware, it's everything. They've only played them 4 times.
Yeah, but I mean... It's not going to be somebody who plays in their like qualifying or who's played in. Yeah, yeah, okay.
I'll give you a clue that it's not in South America.
Right, yeah, cheers. 4 times I've played them. I'm going to go for Croatia.
Norway.
Oh, wow.
I know, right? 2 wins and 2 draws. 2 from 3. 8 is for awards. Who is the only player to win PFA Players Player, Fans Player, Young Player, and Football Writers Player in a single season? So that's all 4 main awards.
Can you possibly recap that?
That's PFA Players Player, Fans Player, Young Player, and Football Writers Player of the Year award.
Again,
in a single season.
Can you tell me, this is presumably Premier League era?
Yeah.
All
yeah.
Right, I was going to say, I didn't think all
main
of those...
awards
existed. But in the same season?
In the same season, yeah. The only player to win all 4 awards.
What a question.
I think you quite often see someone win 2 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one player in one season.
Who had an impact on the Premier League at a young age that was that good that they were given all of these awards? No idea. I don't think it is him, but I'm going to go for Ryan Giggs.
Incorrect. He did play for Manchester United. And he is one of the arguably 2 best players ever to grace football.
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Cristiano Ronaldo in 2006-2007.
When he used to have really bad teeth.
And bad hair as well.
Yeah.
Final question, 50-50. F is for the FA Cup again. Back to the FA Cup. Who has won the trophy more out of Manchester United and Liverpool?
Oh, it's good. It's a good question. I'm going to have to go for Manchester United.
Correct. 12-7.
Is it really?
Yeah, I actually thought it might have been Liverpool when I read it. 12-7.
Aston Villa have got quite a few as well, haven't
We've
they?
We've got 7 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 out of 5.
3 festive points to start 2019.
So you've stretched the lead by 10. Brilliant.
That's it for this week.
It is.
We've recorded 2 episodes and we've come back with a bang after a little break.
And on current form, we'll see you in March.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll
yeah.
have a big break again and see
Yeah, that'll be that. Yeah, a lot will be happening this weekend. Obviously, the Premier League is back. The Championship is back Friday night. Leeds taking on Derby. Who have Villa got this weekend?
We have got... You've put me massively under the spotlight there.
Well, while you think about that, Southampton
who
are...
Who have we got?
Southampton are away at Leicester. And there's obviously quite a lot of pressure on Claude Puel. So it wouldn't really surprise me to see us go there and get absolutely turned
we're
over.
We're away at Wigan.
You're away.
We're
at
away
Wigan.
At Wigan.
3 yeah. points.
We need them, and they're in dire straits. So I'd like to think we'll get something.
Well, let's hope for a better 2019 for both of our football clubs.
Indeed. Thank you very much for joining us. Au revoir.
Goodbye.